Good evening and welcome along to another episode of The Score, our midweek sports show here on Highland Radio. It is Mark Gallagher with you on this Thursday evening, the 9th of July, and it's going to be a busy show as always. Derry City have just kicked off in Sofia in their Europa League Round 1 qualifier. We'll be going live to Bulgaria very shortly. More on that in just a second, but I'll give you a word on what's coming up on tonight's programme between now and 8 o'clock. Former Finn Harps captain Joe Boyle will join us to give us thoughts on the current lay of the land in the League of Ireland. Later we'll hear from Joe Call about this weekend's football tournament on Inishbofin Island, and we'll be speaking with Donegal man Gavin Carlin, who is once again taking academy players from the USA to play in the Foyle Cup in Derry. But firstly, on tonight's show, let's go live to Bulgaria, where Derry City are up against CSKA Sofia in the first round of Europa League qualifying. There for Highland Radio Sport this evening is Kevin McLaughlin. Kevin, how have the early stages panned out?
Well, Derry will be quite comfortable and happy enough. Still scoreless here after 8 minutes, but Derry had actually the first half chance again. Michael Duffy, direct from a corner, nearly caught the keeper out, but the big keeper got a punch away. Derry have given two debuts this evening. Ellis Chapman and Christy Grogan come into the starting 11, so it's a bold move between and Lynch that he's had to just sign these boys at the weekend, and they're going straight on the European game, so it just tells you the task that they have here. But Derry, 7 minutes on, they're quite happy. It's a hostile atmosphere, you can probably hear behind me. And just as we speak, the home side's coming at the very back line. And it's just inside the marsh, great chance, but a fantastic clearing by Patrick McLean there. So no, after 8 minutes here, it's Derry City, no CSK Sofia, no.
Good stuff, Kevin. We'll be back with Kevin shortly on the programme for another update from Bulgaria. Bohemians are also in action this evening. They're at home in Conference League qualifying, and I can tell you with 49 minutes on the clock, it remains Bohemians 0, St Joseph's 0. Bohemians and Derry are the second and third teams in European action this week. Shamrock Rovers were in action on Tuesday, but they lost in Malta to Floriana 2-0. As I say, back to Kevin with another update later in the programme. Now, focusing on action closer to home, and Finn Harps have the chance to win two games in a row as they host bottom side Treaty United in the SSE Airtricity League First Division at Finn Park tomorrow night. Bernardo Montero struck with 10 minutes remaining last week to give Harps all 3 points against Wexford in Ballybuffet. Although Treaty are bottom, a win for the visitors tomorrow night would see Kevin McHugh's side drop to the bottom of the league standings, so it is an important game for Harps. As we heard from Kevin, Derry City are in Europa League qualifying action tonight in Bulgaria, so no league game for them this week, but the two top flight games on tomorrow are Drogheda United against Dundalk, and St Patrick's Athletic are away to Waterford. A little bit earlier I caught up with former Finn Harps captain Joe Boyle to talk all things League of Ireland. Joe, with Derry in action in Europe this evening, I suppose it provides a wee bit of a natural break in the league for Tiernan Lynch and co, maybe a much needed break. Another really disappointing result last week, getting beat at home by Waterford, and it really seems to be one step forward, two steps back for Derry City these days.
Last Friday night was really disappointing to think that they were 3-0 down against Waterford in the Brandywell, and that was a real disappointment for Derry and all their fans. And to think that there was talks earlier in the day about them looking to sign Lonergan from Waterford, and he's ended up with a hat-trick, so it was a bitterly disappointing. And you know, them just returning to the Brandywell as well, you'd have thought that would give them real impetus to be coming back, and it's looking so well in the Brandywell. So look at, delighted to be heading off to Sofia tonight, and that they'll be looking to try and get a hugely positive result there, because when they come back from Sofia, then their next game again is a European match against Sofia, then followed by the FAI Cup match. So it'll be a couple of games before they face off against St Patrick's Athletic away, and then Sligo at home. So look, it is a welcome distraction, and games that Derry will be looking to try and turn what has been a very, very poor season into a little bit more positivity.
So no league match for Derry this week. League leader Shamrock Rovers also aren't playing. They lost 2-0 to Maltese side Floriana on Tuesday in Champions League qualifying, Joe. That was a really poor result over there for the best team in Ireland as well.
Oh, I was really disappointed. I had been listening to Stephen Bradley in the warm-up and all the positivity around Kiko Lopez and, you know, how well Shamrock Rovers has been playing. I didn't expect that. I was just following bits and pieces online where Shamrock Rovers started well but then ended up getting beat 2-0. So it's going to be a big week for them to get things turned around and get ready to try and reverse that result next week in Dublin.
So with the likes of Derry, Bowes, Shamrock Rovers, they're all in action in Europe this week. Suppose it gives the likes of St Pat's and Dundalk the opportunity to put a bit of a squeeze on at the top of the Premier Division.
Yeah, like Waterford will be on a real high as they take St Patrick's down to Waterford this week, and Dundalk have the loud derby. So, you know, that will be a ding-dong battle. Neither of the two of them would be guaranteed a positive result for Dundalk or St Pat's. So, you know, it's going to be a difficult Friday night for both of those teams. But if they are serious about challenging Shamrock Rovers, then not less than 3 points will be required.
St Pat's are away to Waterford, as you say, and a win would see them go into second spot. How do you see that game going, considering Waterford have really, really made a good fist of it since the new manager came in?
Yeah, Waterford have just flipped everything on their head over the last couple of weeks, and they've been playing much better. And, you know, they've tightened up a little bit at the back, although they did concede 2 late goals against Derry. So, you know, going down to Waterford, there'll be a huge bounce from that result last week, and I would expect St Pat's to struggle, but I would expect Pat's to come through because they have been in a really, really good vein of form over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, to get a chance to leapfrog Bohemians is never more important for Pats fans than to try and get closer to Shamrock Rovers, and this weekend offers them a perfect opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and as you said, the other Premier Division game tomorrow night, the Louth Derby, Dundalk against Drogheda at Oriel Park. It has a bit of a ring to it, and they're always intense game in the Louth Derby, Joe.
Yeah, they've been really, really good games over the last couple of years when they've been playing each other in the Premier Division. I expect nothing else. I do expect that Drogheda will come and throw everything that they have at Dundalk. But again, Dundalk has been in really, really good form. I know that they've lost Owen Kenny to Portsmouth in the last couple of days as well, but I do expect that Dundalk at home should have enough. And then on Saturday night, you've got Galway who'll take on Sligo Rovers in the local derby there. And you know, that's a big game for both teams, as well as Sligo have slipped, unfortunately, to the bottom of the league, and Galway have dropped down as well. And, you know, neither of the two teams can afford a defeat. So I'd be looking at that one possibly being a draw.
Yeah, so let's move on to the First Division. Finn Harps, another home game this week after picking up a much needed 3 points against Wexford last week. A great result, but what did you make of the performance overall, Joe?
At times, Harps were really, really good. At times, they were under pressure, and you know, you would have thought they were going to concede. There was a couple of passages of play where, in the space of a couple of minutes, you could have seen them conceding maybe 2-3 goals. But Joel Bradley Walsh and Connor Tourish were excellent the last night, where the two of them defended really, really well, and they kept plugging away, and they stayed in the game, which for me was something that was really important coming off a string of really, really, really poor results. And in Montero's goal was a really, really good goal. I thought he'd come on, done very little, and then pulled a wonder goal out of the bag. And, you know, 2 weeks in a row that he's got two goals, and you'd be expecting him to start now on Friday night when they take on Treaty at home. And I think they can ill afford now to end up getting anything but a win now against Treaty, because if Treaty beat them, then they will manage to leapfrog them. And, you know, so far this season, in the two matches we played them, all we've picked up of Treaty is 1 point. So we need to be getting the 3 points on Friday night when we take on Treaty in Balbuffet.
Even though there will be confidence from getting that win last week, as you said, a defeat tomorrow would see Harps drop to the bottom of the table. Does that maybe add a wee bit of pressure coming into tomorrow night's game, because they really, really do not want to drop to that bottom spot?
No, they don't. But again, I think the confidence that they can take from Friday night, where at times Wexford were really, really good. They moved the ball well. They were very fluid in their attack. And it was a case on Friday night, whoever got that first goal was going to go on and win the game, because you didn't see the other team managing to rally to score two. And that's how it proved, because when Harps got the goal, you could just see the levels in the Wexford team dropping. And, you know, that level of confidence that Harps will get from that 3 points should, for me, see them in a good position where they will go on and hopefully get all 3 points against Treaty. But it's not going to be easy, because, you know, in the two previous games, they got turned over down in Limerick, and they managed a 2-2 draw in the 94th minute with that wonder goal from Conor Tourish. And again, I think this week himself and Joel Bradley Walsh in the back four will need to make sure that they defend really, really well. But I do think Hearts need to sharpen up an attack and be a little bit more penetrating and a little bit more dangerous and a bit of guile in their attack as well this week, because at times last week it just didn't work until Montero came on and pulled that wonder goal out of the bag.
Yeah, so hopefully another Harps win tomorrow night. We'll have updates from the game with Jermaine Doherty from the 7:45 kickoff at Finn Park. Elsewhere in the division, runaway league leaders Cork City are at home to Longford. UCD make the short trip south to play Bray. Athlone host Cove, and it is Wexford against Kerry. Joe, last week the news broke on the potential investor coming in at Finn Harps, ex-Philippines international Freddie Gonzalez. He's not even in the club and he seems to be, you know, a household name in the circles these days. That meeting was due to take place last weekend, but it has been kicked down the road until the 19th of this month. That's next Sunday. What are your thoughts on what that might mean for the club if it does go through?
Oh, I think it'd be a brilliant initiative for the club that if they could get this on board. It looks like they've done a lot of work to get it this far, and you know they've put in a huge amount of efforts behind the scenes. Disappointed that the meeting didn't take place last Sunday. Now it's going to take place on the day of the World Cup final, and you know this could be Finn Harps World Cup. When you look at sums of money that's looking to be invested in the stadium and looking at some of the other bits and pieces that the club owe in relation to creditors as well, if they were to clear that and to get the stadium project up and running, it would be a hugely, hugely positive initiative for the club. So from my point of view, I think it's really, really good news, and I think the club deserve great credit for getting it this far. But now the hard work takes centre stage and trying to get it across the line and get Freddie on board. And you know, I think we could have a new hero in Balbuffet if Freddie was to come in with all his money and to, you know, give the club a bit of energy and a bit of a lift going forward. And when you look around football throughout Europe, every club needs a Freddie that can come in and provide that funding, because you know the cost of everything at the minute, of keeping a team on the road and keeping facilities right, it does cost a lot of money. And I do think that the people of Donegal would back such a takeover, and hopefully at the meeting on the 19th that'll be the way that it'll turn out.
There you go. That is my chat with former Finn Harps captain Joe Boyle a wee bit earlier, and we're going to be hearing from Joe throughout the coming weeks on the Score programme. And we're also going to be going back to Kevin McLaughlin, who is in Bulgaria, where Derry City are playing CSKA Sofia in the first round of Europa League qualifying. We'll be going back to Kevin after these. It's time to head back to Sofia. It is Derry City taking on CSKA Sofia in the first round of Europa League qualifying. We come back to Kevin McLaughlin. Kevin, I believe there's been a goal.
Yes, the home side have taken the lead here on 20 minutes. Striker, lovely finish at the back post. Good as a speak there, I have a corner here. Keeper's just held it at the second attempt, Michael Duffy corner. But yeah, just getting back to the goal. Corner kick came in the back post, and Ivanos Pitas, lovely technique at the back post, chested it down, picked the spot and lobbed it over Brian Maher and a few of the Derry City players. It didn't get tight enough to the striker at the back post, but he had a header just before that Brian Maher tipped away, and he had also a strike, which again Maher had to turn around the post, and it came from that corner that gave CSK the lead. They have now definitely upped the ante. Derry will feel that the keeper, CSK keeper, has been a wee bit dodgy in crosses, has fumbled a few. Ellis Chapman had a free kick at the keeper, pushed around the post for a corner, which then, as I said earlier, Michael Duffy had crossed in there. But look, Derry, look, they know themselves, it's now batting down the hatches for a while. The atmosphere, as I said earlier, it was very good. Well, you can imagine they're now tenfold by taking the lead, but it's just as we speak there and are on the counter-attack, Michael Duffy and the boys, but it's clear. So from Sofia, it's CSK Sofia 1, Derry City 0.
Thanks, Kevin. We'll be returning to Kevin around about the halfway mark in that game. Not great news from a Derry perspective, but Bohemians have taken the lead in their Conference League qualifier against St Joseph's of Gibraltar. Douglas James Taylor with the goal on the hour mark. So it is now Bohemians 1, St Joseph's 0. More on the Europa League qualifier and the Conference League qualifiers a little bit later on in the programme. But for now, we're going to focus on something more local. And this weekend sees a 2-day festival on the island of Inishbofin, just 2 miles off the coast of Northwest West Donegal, of course. The annual event has many attractions and the island's population swells as visitors disembark off the ferry from Maharoti. One of the highlights is a soccer tournament played at the highest point of the small island on what is coincidentally probably its flattest part. Glenelg United's Joe Call, who has strong Inishbofin links, is one of the organisers. He's been speaking with Chris Ashmore about the event and also recalled his time when, as a highly rated teenage goalkeeper, he spent 2 years at Old Trafford as an apprentice, a far cry from the wilds of Inishbofin.
Well, this coming weekend is a very special one for the island of Inishbofin. There's a fela on. It's an annual event. There's all sorts of things happening on the Saturday and the Sunday, and we're going to concentrate on the football tournament, which gets underway on the island at around 10 o'clock. I'm delighted to say that Glenelg United committee member and player, Joe Call, who's one of the organisers of this tournament, he is joining me on the line to tell me a little bit more about it. Joe, Inishbofin, for those people who don't know, just off Maharoti, this is a tournament been going nearly a decade.
Yeah, it has been. I suppose it would have run, you know, before that even, but I suppose we've had an unbroken run now, probably, well, since May, timing it now, we've had an unbroken run of probably about 10 years, I suppose, with the break there with COVID, but yeah, we've had a good run at it. Historically, it's been going on years before then, but, you know, for reasons other here and there, you know, kind of, it went quiet for a couple of years, but we got it back in, on its feet about, would have been 10 years ago now, last year, so it's been into our 11th year as such, and yeah, it's just for us, it's just nice. It keeps football on the island. The island itself always had a strong tradition of soccer, and you know, a lot of people that came out of it in the days when the young ones were on the island and there was youth there, you know, soccer was their go-to, and I suppose it just keeps that tradition going on the island.
Yeah, now you have strong links with the island, and over the years, you know, the population has... It fluctuated. People still go back over in the summer months. There's quite a few houses that have been converted and renovated in recent years. And this little festival, it's a way of bringing people together, and there's a great buzz about it.
Oh, 100%. As you said, like, I have a strong connection. My father was born and reared in the island. Spent his life there until they eventually moved to the mainland for school, and then eventually when they came out to live, and this is my mother's also from the island, so my grandmother on one side and then my father's full-blooded, and yeah, as I said, it's one of these things that everybody looks forward to every year, you know, when the date comes out, people start booking flights, booking boats, you know, booking holidays around it, and for us it's not a wild lot in our organising, we don't think a wild lot of it, but you know, it's a big thing for the island itself, you know, people are cleaning around houses, you know, they're painting, they're cutting grass, you know. The island itself's impeccably kept, and, you know, this just gives that extra kind of incentive for people maybe to get their hands kind of dirty and get a bit of work done around the place, and kind of pulls everybody together as well as that, you know, and it keeps life on the island. You know, as I said, the population-wise, it's very few there year-round, but come the summer, a lot, including ourselves, try to spend as much time as we can in there. You know, it's a nice part of the world, probably, that's a little bit understated at times. A lot of people don't know the beauty of it and what it offers, but, you know, for us, it's a chance for us supposed to showcase it as well, you know, and show what we can do and what we have at our own front door.
Now, tell us a little bit about the pitch. It's pretty much at the highest point of the island, and anybody who's going there for the first time, I think, we'll be quite surprised just how flat an area it actually is.
It is actually probably the only... It's funny that it's probably the flattest part of the island, probably the only flat part nearly on it. And it sits right on the top, you know. The Mulla would be the highest point of the island, with probably some of the most breathtaking views you'll see on any island. You know, you see as far west as Bloody Foreland, and then you're looking east toward Hornhead and out as far as Torrey and Ninistoo and Inishbeek. You know, it's lovely up there. It's bare, it's barren enough when the breeze is coming through and that, but you know, it's as equally as beautiful, and you know, the surface, I suppose, wouldn't be quite the the snooker table you'd maybe expect elsewhere, but you know, it does us for the day we're in there, and you know, we don't get obviously too much of a chance for maintenance on it, but it holds up well year after year, and you know, people just, I think it's a bit of an attraction for people to come and play in it as well, solely because it's so different, and that it brings a little bit something that people maybe haven't experienced otherwise.
Yeah, it's a pretty unique tournament. Tell us a little bit about the teams that are taking part. How many teams are there? What's the format on the day? And what are the trophies up for grabs?
Yeah, generally we can cater. Like, because we try to run it out on the one day, because logistically it just makes that bit more sense. We only have the one pitch, and we try to run with an 18 tournament every year, and generally we do get that. You know, some years, like any other tournament, you get a fall off near the time, you might end up with a 7 or something, but there's never been any less than 7 teams, and you know what, it's encouraging, because we see the same teams come back year after year, bringing, you know, it just invigorates it, and then you'll always get a change up, maybe one or two changes every year, and generally they're, for the most part, they're fairly locally based, you know. Maybe from the parishes of Glanilly, might get one from Gidor. There's a team in from the likes of, there's a team in from Dunfanaghy this year. We've a team from Letterkenny with a team in from England, with a side of some Inishbofin blood in it as well. And like, just kind of, it keeps it all interesting when you have that core group, and when the others like to feed in and out of it, and it's just. Yeah, as I said, the quality of player is always there too. You know, sometimes the team with the best of players aren't always the ones that fall over the line on the day. Sometimes the ones with a bit more grit and determination, a lot of experience too sometimes. But yeah, at the end of the day, there's two trophies, I suppose, up for grabs in a sense. There's a perpetual trophy there, named after Cannon Shields, who would have been actually the priest who was named after him on our inaugural year when we came back, which would have been 10 years ago, which would have been the 50th celebration of the Island Chapel. And it was Cannon Shields who would have spearheaded the drive to build the chapel on the island. And there was a lot of history there and a lot of a strong connection between the island and him. So we thought it would be fitting to name it after him. And then secondly, then we also offered as a yearly, suppose again, a perpetual trophy which goes out to the player of the tournament. There's been a couple of good names on the trophy so far, so it'll be going into its fourth year now this year, and that trophy is named after Christopher McFadden. Christopher would have strong links to the island. He would have been a cousin of my own, actually. Christopher passed away a couple of years ago. He was only in his 20s, and he loved that weekend. He lived for that weekend, you know, on the island, and he always laced up the boots and got back into it. And, you know, it's just nice to keep them two very different people, but two equally as important people. It's just nice to keep their memories alive as well, I suppose. And that also, I suppose, brings a bit to the weekend when you have the likes of them trophies that are at stake, and that they do carry some kind of meaning to people.
Yeah, so the tournament itself gets underway around 10 o'clock. Then at 12 o'clock, I mean, there are attractions throughout the day. There's a 5K run and walk. There's a bouncy castle there. There's Cayley and social dancing in the afternoon. And then in the evening, off-the-cuff band and a disco. And you have there's a marquee and down near the harbour. Plenty going to be happening in the evening. And then on the Sunday, you've a Kids World Cup tournament at 11 o'clock. That was, I suppose, a new venture relatively recently, but you're going to build on that, hopefully.
Yeah, it was. It was kind of something we just kind of thought about. It was more so, not so much the fall. Sunday mornings are quite quiet. You know, there's probably a lot of sore heads about in the Sunday morning, and kids are maybe a little bit less occupied, and it just gave us a chance to get people up and get them out and get the kids up the road and, you know, get them busy as well and drag some parents along with us. And it just means that, you know, the kids have their space and their time as well. Like, fair enough, there's a lot of activities going around the pier and around the hall and stuff for them, but I think, as I said, sport is always central to the island, and as are the kids. And it's just allows us to get them back up and running. And like last year, we had a mix of a ring from 8-year-olds to 12, 13-year-olds, and they all banged heads and they all took great fun and great pleasure out of the hour and a half of football that we offered them. And as I said, as people always, they comment on how nice it was to see the kids back in the Mulla in their 20s and 30s. I think we had 40 there last year, and we'll probably see the same just looking at the replies we've had so far this year, because we're going to try to plan a little bit ahead logistically. And you know, we're probably talking similar numbers again this year, probably near enough 40, more than we've been pushing, more than 40 kids. And it'll definitely be something we'll run every year, you know. And it's just, we couldn't really do it without the help of the parents that are there and that are willing to give us a handout. And it's just, they just enjoy it. It's a bit of fun and a bit of a let loose for them. You know, sometimes maybe sports are a bit too serious for kids at the minute, and I suppose just gives them a wee bit of fun for a couple of hours and mixing playing football with brothers and sisters and cousins that they mightn't normally get to kick ball with, or you know. So I think that's probably a lot to do with it as well.
And fortunately, the weather forecast looks very, very favourable for the weekend. There's other activities on the Sunday, but certainly for the football and the 5K run and walk, it'll be great to get that weather. And on the Facebook, people can find out more information about the festival on Inishbofin. Just before we let you go, Joe, just thinking back now, you went over to Old Trafford as a teenager back in 2010. It must seem quite a while ago now.
It does. It feels like a lifetime ago. A lot of changes and a lot of different directions gone since then. All right, you know, it was an experience for me that I'll always carry with me. You know, and I'll never leave it down as such. But yeah, it's a long time ago now, looking back. All right.
Yeah, you were there for the guts of 2 years, at a time when, of course, United under Sir Alex Ferguson were absolutely flying. And I was just reading there, I think you played, was it 7 games for the United Academy side? And when you look back on it, you know, you were there at a time, some big, big names.
Yeah, big, big names. But I suppose what I'll always remember about it is that, you know, all them big names were always fairly grounded, you know. They're always, when Sir Alex Ferguson was there, you know, he ran a tight ship, you know, and I suppose the way he's seen it, there's no player bigger than the club. And, you know, that's something that always kind of, that I'll always remember, you know. As successful as they were, you know, everybody, they were only a cog in a bigger wheel and a bigger way of going. And I suppose he always instilled that into players. And, you know, he was as able to put a name on me in the corridor as he was any of his own senior players, and that's something that always resonated with me, you know, that he always seen people for who they were, and everybody was a part of it, you know, from the kitchen staff to the kit men to cleaning ladies. You know, he had a big operation there, and I said that'll always resonate with me, the way he ran it. And as I said, I think things have changed a lot since now. I think player power carries a lot more weight nowadays, and you see that through the way football's going, the money involved and everything. But as for me, like, a hugely successful time, but also, you know, a very grounding time for me. And as it was a magnificently run club, you know, great people, and from top right down to bottom, you know. And I said there was a lot going on. There was league titles being won. We got a glimpse of the Champions League final when Barcelona beat them at Wembley, and you know, they were all moments that'll be, I'll never forget them, you know, and they'll always stand with you.
That is Joe Call talking about his time at Manchester United, and of course a big weekend ahead for Inishbofin Island. The Féile Inishbofinia 2026 taking place on Saturday and Sunday the 11th and 12th of July. Lots happening, but Chris and Joe focusing on the football tournament at 10 o'clock on Saturday. Speaking of football, there's been a goal in Sofia. It's Derry City taking on CSKA Sofia in the round one of Europa League qualifying. We'll find out all about it after this quick break.
Highland Sport is brought to you by Michael Murphy Sports, home to a full range of Gaelic gloves designed for comfort, grip and performance. Shop now at michaelmurphysports.ie.
Welcome back to the Score programme. It is time to return to Bulgaria. It's Derry City taking on CSKA Sofia in round one of Europa League qualification. We can now return to Kevin McLaughlin. Kevin, CSKA had scored the last time we were with you. What is the latest now?
The latest now, just as we speak, CSKA are in again here. Half a chance. No, Derry looks up, they've mopped it up. The striker's in. Oh! CSKA has just went back in front. And we're just about to say that Derry had equalised through Liam Boyce on 31 minutes. But just as we speak here on 42 minutes, CSKA Sofia have just went back in front with another fantastic strike. 25-yard effort from the edge of the box. I'm just checking. Who scored it? It's a third skipper. Jordy Allen. Their skipper made no mistake from 25 yards out. Fantastic strike. But they're going bitterly disappointed because they got level by the Liam Boyce's strike. After Michael Duffy's quick thinking of a free kick, found Boyce inside the box, and while he didn't hit it the best, it bobbled in the net, and the small contingent of Derry fans were jumping for joy with the equaliser, as was the Derry City bench. But just as we're approaching half-time, the skipper for CSKA, Sofia, has just given them the lead again. So it's CSKA Sofia 2, Derry City 1.
Thank you very much, Kevin. We'll hope to return to you, Kevin, before the end of the show if we can squeeze it in. CSKA Sofia look like they're going to be taking a 2-1 lead into the break. What about Bohemians in the Conference League? 83 minutes gone. It remains Bohemians 1, St. Joseph's 0. We'll give you a half-time score in the Derry game very, very shortly indeed. But for now, we're going to go back to more things local. And Gavin Carlin, who hails from the Crossroads in Killigordon, he had a spell in his teenage years with West Bromwich Albion's underage setup, but ultimately injury curtailed his hopes to progress into the professional ranks. Nevertheless, he then went to America and obtained a soccer scholarship, later setting up his very successful academy, Good Lad Soccer. Last year, he brought two teams across the Atlantic to take part in the prestigious Foyle Cup tournament headquartered in Derry. And it was such a successful trip that this year he's bringing over five teams. He's been speaking to our own Chris Ashmore about the forthcoming trip to play in the Foyle Cup, which will feature over 1,000 teams this year and begins on July 20th. Gavin also talks about how the FIFA World Cup is providing a major boost for the beautiful game in the States.
Well, delighted to say that joining me on the line from Florida is Crossroads Killigordon man Gavin Carlin. He runs a soccer academy there called Good Lad Soccer. Last year brought over a couple of teams to take part in the Foyle Cup in Derry. And as we all know, that's a competition that's getting bigger and bigger. Over 1,000 teams taking part this year. It really is some tournament. And Gavin will once again be bringing over teams this year. Gavin, you're coming back. There's going to be more of you, more teams, more personnel. So the taste from last year, it was a hugely successful venture from your point of view.
Oh, you could say that again. And Chris, I just wanted to say thank you very much for having me on and giving me the opportunity to chat. And it's great to catch up with a familiar voice from back home as well. But like you said, yeah, we're taking 70 US-based players over to the Foyle Cup this summer. Five teams, three girls teams, two boys teams. A jump from 25 to 70. Quite the undertaking, but one we're more than ready for.
Now, for people who aren't familiar with your own background, you as a teenager, certainly an international soccer career was beckoning. You signed a contract with West Bromwich Albion when you were just 16. Unfortunately, you had a number of serious injuries and you had to effectively abandon that dream. But you did obtain a soccer scholarship. You went to Jacksonville University in Florida and one thing led to another and the establishment of your own soccer academy. So over the years now, that was what, when you went to West Brom, that was what, more than 10, 12 years ago now, is it?
We just passed the 19 years there in July 2nd there. So it was 2007, I signed on permanently with Good Lad with West Bromwich Albion. So from 2007, I was there until 2009.
And the setting up of the academy in Florida, you know, tell us about how that just reminds us how it all began from small beginnings, and it has grown considerably.
I've grown considerably, delighted and honoured to say that I'm over here in Florida doing something that I love. I knew then, whenever I left West Brom, had the opportunity to come and play in Florida at the Division One level with Jacksonville University, and something I would strongly recommend to anybody listening to this, you know, that are local football players back in Donegal, back in the Northwest area, that, you know, aren't quite making the grade across the channel in England, or and if they have the opportunity to go and play in America, something they should grab with both hands, because it's been great. It's been life-changing and totally a positive for me. But yeah, when I came over here to Jacksonville University, I knew when the playing career ended that I had so much knowledge and from the years from playing in Ireland underage and playing in European Championships for Ireland underage and playing at West Brom, playing the reserve team and being in with the first team, that I knew I had to pass on this knowledge. And the fact that the American market, they're so hungry and so, you know, they're desperate for good coaching over here, that there's such an opening. And I really did find my niche, and it's just gone from strength to strength. We started off just kind of a grassroots type thing, just doing private lessons, and then went from private lessons to tournaments, and then went from tournaments to international teams. So it's gone from strength to strength. And that's the great thing. The population's growing here in Florida, and so is the appetite for the game. You see how good the US national team's doing in the World Cup, that the sport in this country is going from strength to strength, particularly in my time from when I arrived here in 2011 to present day.
And with the World Cup being on in the States, obviously there's going to be a bounce from this. So from your own point of view, I mean, I take it there'll be a surge in interest in youngsters taking up the game.
That's right. And as we were saying off air as well, America, that's a good thing about America. They like their winners. And the fact that the country's doing well, in their games, they're winning, is only but a positive thing. And it's particularly when the women's team, you know, being up there with one of the best in the world, and now you have the men competing now in the latter stages of the tournament itself. Like I said, it's only but a positive.
Now, tell us a little bit about the idea last year to bring people over to the Foyle Cup. Was this something that you'd been thinking about for a while?
Yeah, so the international tournament teams, it is a thing that's done quite, you know, quite a lot here in the States. And the fact that my company was growing and growing, I was being asked by parents over here in the States to provide it for the players. And, you know, the dates of the Foyle Cup lined up perfectly. The fact that I'm from the area, and the fact that I played in the tournament myself, and I know it like the back of my hand, I thought, why not? It's an opportunity for me to bring, you know, players that I coach here in the northeast of Florida a chance to showcase the northwest of Ireland, and particularly the Americans when they come over. You know yourself, they go to Dublin, they go down to the Cork, and they go to the Ring of Kerry, Galway, back across to Dublin, and they leave again. They don't particularly go to the northwest of Ireland. So I thought, this is my chance, you know, to showcase the northwest of Ireland to my client base and do what I can for the area that I grew up in. And 80% of the 70 of the 25 players we took last year are coming with us again, plus another, you know, was that another 55 players and a total traveling party of 220. So we're taking 70 players and 220 parents. So you could take, so it's 290 people we're taking across to the Foyle Cup.
Yeah, that just really is a great illustration of sort of the economic benefit and how a tournament like the Foyle Cup can have such a spin-off. And because the tournament has grown so much, I mean, it's not just in Derry. Parts of it are played out in Donegal and in Tyrone, and there's a big knock-on effect. Tell me just the players who are coming over, what age groups are we talking about?
So we have three girls teams, 2011, 2012 team, and a 2014 girls team. And then on the boys side, we have a 2013 boys team and a 2015 boys team. So you're looking at that age range of what, 11 through to then around that 15 year old age range when you put them all together. But we had a waiting list to get in. I could have took even more if I wanted, but the fact that you're flying them 3,000 miles across the Atlantic Ocean, you have to guarantee people playing time and guarantee them a good experience. They, you know, at the end of the day, they're a client. You have to keep them happy. So I could have taken more if I wanted, but we're keeping it. We're keeping the rosters, as they call them over here, quite tight. So it gets everybody plenty of playing time and keeps them, hopefully, fingers crossed, going back for a third year to the Foyle Cup.
And for the players involved, they're going to be up against opposition from Ireland, the UK, countries around Europe. It'll be a great experience.
Oh, it is, especially for the ones that played in the last year. That's what brought them back again. It definitely is. It's a different style compared to what you go up against here in Florida. And like I've been doing a lot of media TV interviews over here in the States, drawing attention towards it. And I've always mentioned that, you know, long after the results fade and long after the winter medals have been put away up in the attic or put away up in the loft, you'll always remember the first time you played in Europe. And the tournaments are quite big over here, especially the size and the scale of tournaments. Like 915 tournament would be quite regular. You would have regular tournaments here in the States of that size. So the Americans, the American mind, the American parent, they're well versed in what they're about to face.
And tell me just a little bit about your own academy in terms of facilities, pitches, funding. Like, is there anything comparable over here, or are you in America? Are you one of the bigger academies? Sort of, where do you stand?
That'd be a great question. You'd probably be looking at something the size of maybe the East Donegal. I'm trying to think Inishowen Soccer Association. I'm trying to think maybe I would compare them. So I think, God, that's a great question. Maybe something that, maybe the size of Ballybofey United have grown now to. I would nearly, it would be even Letterkenny Rovers. I'm trying to think of a that's a great question. So maybe the size about Ballybofey. I'm trying to think numbers wise and client base wise. You're probably looking at the size, maybe even the Cork Athletic, Ballybofey United, if you combine the two of them, something in around that size. And it's great the what I'm doing over here, that they have the fact that I'm taking so many local players over to Europe. And last year the girls got beaten in the final by a very good team from Sion Mills, and the boys made it all the way to the quarterfinals and got beat by a very good team there, from Tri-Star team from Derry. So they're looking to go a bit better this year. As for over here, I'm very good to have the backing of the local county council here when it comes to facilities. And I have I work out of a facility similar to probably the Finn Valley Centre. For anybody listening, you know, back there in Highland Radio, if I had to compare comparisons what I have here in Florida, it would be that there. You're probably looking at something the size of the Cork Athletic and Ballybofey United combined together, working out of a facility like the Finn Valley Centre.
And as a state, Florida, is it seen as a state where the game is strong?
It is definitely. Everybody nearly in Florida plays the sport from the ages of 8 to 12. American football is always king in this country, but I do see in my time, I think soccer has nearly passed baseball, and I see it catching basketball. And like when I first came here in 2011, I could barely get a Premier League game on TV. And the fact now, ever since NBC started their Saturday morning coverage over here, and you have the likes of, you know, Lee Dixon and Danny Higginbotham and Robbie Musto, all those ex-Premier League players from the 90s, and Tim Howard as well, just to name a few. It's really, it's gone from the coverage and the viewing and the appetite for the football, the soccer here in Florida. It's only gone from strength to strength.
Now, before we came on air, we were just talking about the impending takeover at Finn Harps, Freddie Gonzalez from the Philippines, essentially putting the money on the table for what could be a transformational move for the club, and could catapult it beyond where it could really have never thought of being possible. And yet, you know, it's funny, we were talking, there's a link there with the Philippines, and you've been following the story as it's evolved with some interest.
Yeah, so we're growing on social media all the time, Good Lad Soccer. And just the other day I was checking my phone there, and I seen a message on Instagram from a soccer parent, and she noticed that the Finn Harps made the news over here as well in Florida. And she says that her son, that the guy that's potentially taking over Finn Harps, helped her son, he's got Filipino background, get him on the under-17 Filipino team. So it's a small world there, and she spoke very highly of him. And that's what the soccer the soccer parents over here, it would be very intense and very competitive. And the fact that she reached out to me with a glowing review of him, you know, it's only but a good thing for any listening Finn Harps fans that he's getting a glowing review from soccer parents here in Florida.
That's Gavin Carlin, Crossroads native. working in America. Good Lad Soccer is the academy. Very interesting chat there with Chris Ashmore. Once again, bringing his academy players to the Foyle Cup next from the Monday, the 21st of July. So just a quick look at the Derry City game. It is halftime. CSK Sofia 2, Derry City 1, and Bohemians have doubled their lead in the Conference League qualifier round 1. They are now 2 goals to the good against St Joseph's. The clock is running thin on the score this evening, but I'll just have a quick look at what is happening in Gaelic games this weekend. It is a massive weekend for the Donegal under 20 ladies. They play Galway in the All-Ireland under 20 final in Tubbercurry on Saturday afternoon. We'll have live updates from that game with Maureen O'Donnell from the 1 o'clock throw-in on Saturday. Close to home, there's also action in the Donegal Hurling Championship tomorrow night in Group A. Sean McCool's place in Dunans and Buncrana place at Tanta. Group B sees the meeting of Letterkenny Gaels and Burt B, while Dunlow place in Dunans B. In the football, there are a number of interesting matchups in the All-County League. There's one Division 1 game on Saturday. Kilcare play Glenfinn. And then on Sunday, Four Masters go up against Sean McCool's and Dunlow are away to Nivora Lower Rosses. Should Four Masters and Dunlow win their games, they will then meet in the Division 1 League final. St Junans will be looking to pounce on any slip-ups from those top two. They host Erua in Letterkenny. And last year's champions Termin are also still in the mix. They take on Glenswilly at the Burn Road. Those two will also meet in the first round of the championship in a few weeks' time. And in an interesting game at the other end of the table, Gidor are badly in need of a result at St Michael's to avoid being relegated to Division 2. Well, that's where we have to leave it on the score this evening. I've been your host, Mark Gallagher. Thank you very much, as always, for listening in. If you missed anything on tonight's show, you'll be able to listen back to the full show very shortly over on our website at highlandradio.com. Jimmy Stafford is up next, just after the 8 o'clock news. That's it for me. Have a great evening. Enjoy the sport at the weekend, and I'll talk to you all again very soon. Take care.